Happy New Year and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It is episode number 501, the beginning of a new half thousand. There's probably a good term for that, and I don't know it. And a brand new year and decade. It's 2020. We're in the future, but now it's the present, and everything's still the same and awful. Did I say awful? I mean, fantastic, because so many new games to come in this year. Are you hype? The person joining me, Matthew Ford.
Hello, sir. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Did you have a good time off? I trust all our listeners have had a fine time away, but anything exciting? Or was it quiet?
More of a quiet one, just chilling with the family, doing odds and bods and everything like that. Catching up on my huge backlog.
Yes, the pile of shame did get a look in. I finished a couple of things as well, and also had a quiet one, which was good because I've been whining about it on previous shows, but too many planes this year. So we had a nice quiet week, and I'm delighted and almost energized. I remember what sleep looked like briefly.
That's nice.
But I've forgotten now because we've been back at work for a week, and it's the end of the first week, so first podcast of the year. We've got a few things upcoming. End of next week should be a show. The week afterwards we'll be just back from Pocket Gamer Connects London, the first show of the year and the biggest show we have on our calendar. If anyone listens, comes along, come and find us, grab us, show us a new game. That's what it's all about. And we look forward to seeing you there. But we've also got a lot of news and new games and other business to catch up on. So we've got Mob Psycho 100 Psychic Battle coming to mobile. We've got a new Shadow Gun on its way. We've got a Pokemon Direct, plus brand new games that came out this week and a few from the end of the last year, including the likes of End of the Universe, Tap Tap Fish, Abyssrium Pole, Realm Hacker, Klee Spacetime Cleaners, and more. But first, the news. Anyone who wants to hear me talk cluelessly about an anime show, then you're in luck for the next 60 seconds or so. Mob Psycho 100 Psychic Battle is coming to mobile. This is from Crunchyroll Games. It's based on the first two seasons of the anime, and it is going to be an RPG where you collect members of the team, the crew from the show, and then do turn-based style battles. 5v5. If it sounds like I don't really know much about this, it's because I don't watch the show. I've got no idea, but Dave Aubrey, who is our man into the anime in the window, popped off about this big style this morning. So I was kind of obliged to mention it. Seen Mob Psycho 100?
I've seen it. It looks cool. It looks something like a team-based Persona.
Yeah, I mean, yes, from this little trailer, you can watch it on the site, and I'm sure if you're into the show, you'll know a great deal more and care a great deal more than me. But Dave has a fairly good barometer for these kind of things because he likes these shows, and then he's quite honest when the tie-in mobile games are trash. So for him to look at it and go, actually, this is quite exciting, means that there's hope. No guarantees, but there is at least hope. And it's 2020, it's a new year, we're all about optimism around these parts. So keep that in mind, along with Shadow Gun War Games. Now, Shadow Gun series run for a little while. We had the original Shadow Gun, and this is a Mad Finger game. So the guys behind the zombie successful one, Dead Trigger, that's what it was called, and Dead Trigger 2. And the first game was kind of a horde mode game.
Mm.
The very first one when it appeared on Android. The second one is the one that I played, which was Shadow Gun Legends. And that was kind of almost a Destiny style interpretation of it. So it's, you know, first person and running around and doing the shooting and completing the little mini missions on some of the same maps. But there was a narrative kind of quest tied to the middle of it all. And it was surprisingly good. Like, really surprisingly good.
Yes, I went back and actually tried that out because I interviewed the CEO of Madfinger Games. It was one of my trips. I went quite a few, so I can't remember precisely which one. But I think it was Copenhagen. But yes, I went back and tried Legends, and it is Destiny on the head. Lots of fun, quick, fast-paced action.
It felt comfortable, it controlled well, and it looked the part, and we did the review, and it was one of the ones where I played it quite a lot to get enough different footage for the video. That explains why this new version of the game, Shadow Gun War Games, has got 100 million pre-registers already, and sorry, 1 million pre-registers already. Let's not go mental. Let's not go crazy, guys.
They're doing well.
Folks with mad fingers' ears just popped up and went, everyone pre-order the Ferrari. No, just 1 million. But it does suggest that people are very interested. And it's because the new game looks like it's ditched the whole Destiny thing and jumped on the Overwatch train. So it's going to be a hero shooter instead, by the smell of it. So you've got, again, trailers up. You can have a look at it. 5v5 multiplayer hero shooter. Different characters, different abilities, based on the same engine, presumably, and the same setup as the previous game. Which is what makes it quite promising. Because if they can keep the production values and the feel of the previous one, but get the, I guess, the balance of the individual characters right, and make characters that people want to play as, and get the kind of quick in and out feel of Overwatch, then they could be onto a winner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the characters as well, as you mentioned, they all do seem quite original, and playing off that Overwatch vibe, and something Apex Legends has done, what helps them stand out is the variety of characters.
Yeah, it's a personality thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And they've done those little hero trailers you can watch. We've embedded one, which is for one of the heroes called Sarah, who is a droid-looking female character who's charging about with very pretty-looking sci-fi guns. And, oh, I do, looking at it, I do quite want to play it. It actually fits really well, because Shadow God Legends was already quite sci-fi and colourful and all that business. And that's very much the vogue for this kind of thing. Overwatch worked by its big, brash. When I see Overwatch, I think kind of yellow and I think orange. And I think these very bright neon kind of colours, not a gloomy military FPS, everything's a dirty brown colour, and, you know, these things are supposed to be fun and wacky.
And there's, like, the Donnie Darko bunny, which seems to be, like, the mascot.
I didn't see that. I haven't got that far.
It's one of the characters. He seems to be in all the posters, all the promotional material. He seems to be front and centre.
Ah, okay, I gotcha. Well, it's going to be available on both the App Store and Google Play on the 16th of February. So you've got just over a month to hang on for this one. And I get the impression jumping in on day one will be a good time. The lobbies will be rammed with folks. One thing I didn't have a look at this week, because to be honest, I don't have the necessary hardware. But you do, Matthew. So there was a Pokemon Direct that appeared this week, and I saw through the chat that there was lots of Pokemon announcements, including a new game, and I saw terms like dungeon and random generation and things thrown around. So what happened this week?
There was multiple announcements made. First Direct of the year for Nintendo, fully focused on Pokemon, and the first big thing they came out with was Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Rescue Team DX.
Goodness, that's yes. A mouthful.
Isn't it just? So this is a revamped version of the original Nintendo DS game that came out in 2006. So it was Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, Red Rescue Team, and then there was Blue Rescue Team as well. Pokemon always do two games and then typically combine them together for a third. This one, nearly 15 years later, is the third one in some way.
Okay.
And it's going to be on Switch, which is the first time a Pokemon Mystery Dungeon has made its debut on Switch. Lots of people seemed very excited for this. I've never played a Pokemon Mystery Dungeon game. I think they just missed me a little bit, coming out in 2006.
Right.
The difference between this and a normal Pokemon game, whereas you're a trainer and controlling the Pokemon, sending them off in battles, you are actually put into the body of a Pokemon here.
I thought so, because I have seen some stuff about that original DS version. You're actually playing as a Pikachu or a Squirtle or whatever, rather than Ash pointing.
Exactly. So, yeah, you're sent off. You wake up one day in the middle of this Pikachu's body or whatnot, and then you form a band of other Pokemon and you go and rescue other Pokemon. And, you know, Pokemon games are never known for their stories. It's not something that I consider top tier. I'm most surprised that it's coming out March 6th, to be honest. That's a very quick turnaround.
Well, funnily enough, the comment we've had from Dave Aubrey, who also watched the Nintendo Direct and is into his Pokemons, he was less than enthused about this because he just like doesn't really rate the whole randomly generated dungeon crawler thing in general. It was, as he points out, it was a very good idea back in the past when using an algorithm to generate stuff was a very clever way of getting a lot of gameplay out of a very small game. And if you're an indie developer, that was one of the main things where it's like, I can just create an algorithm and then have infinite levels rather than having to spend time crafting 100 levels or something, which takes ages, especially if you're just one person. Mm. He's arguing that nowadays there's no excuse and I want proper levels. But I've never played them, so.
I'd agree as well. I think the thing that puts me off as well is it's a full price game.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, which I definitely doesn't come across as one. Ironically, I think this sort of game would be perfect for mobile.
Mm, yeah, well, if it's a short play time and if the dungeons themselves can be completed relatively quickly and, you know, it's pick up and disposable and every time a new experience or something like that. But I'm not going to offer a comment. I don't know. So that's coming out in March. When you say full price, what, you mean like £30, £40?
I believe Switch games are £49.99 now.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, we'll reserve judgment. We'll have to see how it goes. Apparently, according to Dave, you can find remakes of the original Pokemon Mystery Dungeon games on the eShop, and they actually have demos you can download. So if you've never played one of these, you can have a go at the old versions and then see what you think, and it might whet your appetite for this new one. All right. With that out of the way, what else happened? Now, Sword and Shield, we're going to talk a bit more about because you've actually completed it now, haven't you?
I have.
But you got DLC this time.
They have, yes. So we went into this direct. There was a lot of anticipation. It was also confirmed to be 20 minutes long, which was the longest Pokemon Direct we've ever had. So there's lots of speculation going around. What are we going to get? Are we going to get a new Let's Go game? So, you know, the Let's Go Pikachus and Eevees that came out in 2018. Yeah. That was Generation 1. Are we going to get Generation 2? A Let's Go Togepi or Let's Go Marill? I'm saying names. I'm sure you have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm nodding sagely.
So there was expectation for that. The other alternative, which has been highly requested for a number of years, was a remake of Generation 4. So this was Pokemon Diamond and Pearl. So lots of rumours going on about them. And we didn't get anything to do with that. But what we did get was Pokemon Sword and Shield DLC, as you briefly mentioned. So it's an expansion pass, which is the first time Pokemon has ever done DLC for a mainline game.
Right.
It's replacing that traditional third game, which I mentioned earlier. So you have Red, Blue, and then you have Yellow. You have Silver, Gold, then you have Crystal. And this is just going to replace Sword and Shield. Which makes perfect sense, to be honest. It's very intriguing to me because Pokemon games, every time you start over, you play the same game, building up your team, which is lots of fun, and they do change lots of elements up. But this is now what happens afterwards.
Yeah, so you're not starting from scratch again. You're picking up where you left off after completion and doing, not New Game Plus, but just going on, carrying on.
Exactly. What's next when you're best of the best, basically? They're introducing 200-plus Pokemon, a mix of existing and new ones by the looks of it.
Now, this is because they didn't have all the Pokemon in Sword and Shield, did they?
They didn't, no. That was a... Yeah, it didn't go down well. I'm trying to think what's the best way to say
that. It was a bone of contention when it first came out because people were complaining that you only got, like, what, 400 or something?
That's correct. Yeah, you say only 400.
I know it's ridiculous, but that's what everyone was getting cross about. So presumably now we're going to get the rest of them dumped in DLC.
Yes, that's right. So we're getting another 200 in these two rounds of the expansion pass. So the first one is called the Isle of Armor, which was like a beach-like environment, and it'll have new areas to explore, a new storyline to tie in with a new legendary Pokemon, and that will come out in June, I believe, or just before. I think it was spring.
Yeah.
And then you have the Crowd Tundra, which is more of a...
It's the Crown Tundra, isn't it?
What did I say?
Crowd.
Crown Tundra. Yes, you are right.
Okay.
Yes, so that's due to come out in fall 2020.
Right.
And that's going to be more of a snowy landscape. And again, introduce a different story, different elements. I am quite excited for this. It does look good. The only negative to this I can see, again, is the price point. It's a little bit much, I feel. It's $29.99, which, you know, you could argue it's nearly enough a full game. I was hoping for something around the £15 to £20 mark. But it does seem very substantial, the amount of content they're putting in.
And there'll be these two separate chapters. Yeah, I guess this one is dependent on how big and how rich these two things are, which we don't know until they drop. But, I mean, when they released that third version, right, traditionally in the cycle that you've described, the yellow, is that just released as a third version, another full-priced game, and then you just play through the whole thing again, and it's the same as the other ones, but with a few little variations?
Pretty much. It's exactly the same game, but it will have... every Pokemon in it, so Blue and Red, for example, well, every game that's released, they have two different versions, and certain Pokemon are only available in each, and then the third version will typically have them all.
And do people then go and buy that third version after having played and completed the first two? And is that third version presumably just full price like a normal game?
Yep. Yes.
Right, so this is better, a better deal then, isn't it?
Yes, in theory. There is the argument to say the content that they're rolling out, the Pokemon and everything, should they have been in the game originally? Have they held them back for DLC for this purpose? To bring in new Pokemon, there is that argument. The Pokemon company are very good. If they can make money, they will. Obviously, the two different versions and the expansion pass, it's two different expansion passes. There's different Pokemon in each different expansion pass. So if you have Pokemon Sword and you buy the expansion pass, that is different to Pokemon Shield expansion pass.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So
wow.
You'll have to trade again, or some people that buy both, because lots of people do buy both Sword and Shield,
yes,
buy both expansion passes.
God. I mean, it's already a weird thing to release two versions of a game, one with some content, one without. I mean, this almost preempted this idea of buying full versions or special edition versions and deluxe versions, which we have now. But Pokemon has been wrangling the whole, like, gatekeeping content between two different things all along. And I'm sure most people just buy the one version and accept they won't get every single Pokemon. And there'll be some other, just a couple. How many do they usually exclude? When you're talking about, like, Pokemon, you know, Ruby and Sapphire or whatever, what is the actual difference? Is it, like, one or two Pokemon in the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, or is it more than that?
Per game, obviously, it depends how many Pokemon there were, because early on there was only 150. But I think on average they have only about 20 now.
Right, so I'm looking at Pokemon Ruby, and apparently the ones that were exclusive to Pokemon Ruby were Seedot, Nuzleaf, Shiftry. This is ridiculous. People are just throwing consonants and vowels together. I don't know. What? Zangoose, that at least makes some sense. And Solrock.
That's correct.
That's just six.
Six for that
six
one.
Six Pokemon different between each version.
I'm pretty sure, yeah, in the newest one, I'm pretty sure there was around 20, because I traded with my friend, because we did the smart thing. I bought Sword, he bought Shield, and then we just traded one afternoon.
Gotcha. They've been running this scam for a while.
It is interesting, though, because they are established. If a new company or any developer came out and said, hey, look, we're thinking of doing two versions and putting exclusive content in each, like, I'm not sure how well that would go down. To be fair, I do like what they're doing with this content. It's very much reminiscent of the Orange Islands from the anime series.
Okay.
Back in the day, basically, in the anime, they travelled Kanto, and then there was a series where they went off to the Orange Islands to explore, and that's never been done in the mainline games. So this does remind me of that sort of thing. So that's cool to see that come to life. I think I am going to wait for reviews on this one and see what it's like.
Right, okay. So coming along with that, they mentioned that, you know, you get some old Pokemon returning. You've got the fully evolved version of your starting Pokemon are getting new Gigantamax forms. What the hell does that mean?
Gigantamax. So this is the new gimmick in Pokemon Sword and Shield, which basically just turns your Pokemon into a skyscraper.
Oh.
Every gym battle in Sword and Shield takes place in like a stadium because it's based off Britain. And once a battle, one of your Pokemon can Gigantamax into a giant version of themselves, and then, yes.
Did you just verb Gigantamax?
A little bit.
Okay, fair enough. Skyscraper-sized Pokemon's terrifying. But the big thing that people got excited about, apparently Pokemon Home compatibility is going to appear in February.
Yes, that's finally got a release date. It's only for a certain amount of games, though, which lots of people, again, weren't too happy about. I think it's only Pokemon Sword, Shield, and the Let's Go games. I think they've cut off a lot of Pokemon after that. Nothing on Pokemon Sleep as well, which I was hoping to hear more about.
Oh, yeah. I remember murmurings of that for ages. The Pokemon game that we don't know what it does, plays itself while you sleep.
That's what I mean. I was hoping the Direct would just open it and we'd just see a Pokemon sleeping for 20 minutes and they just go, goodbye, and then that'd be it.
And everyone just hands over their £40.
Yes, pretty much.
Well, all right, then. Well, you can obviously go and see the Nintendo Direct itself, but we've summarised all of the details we've discussed and more over on PokGamer.com. Do go and have a look at that. One little extra bit of Switch news I'm dropping in, because I think this game rules, is Stories Untold. So Stories Untold is a collection of short horror games, which are made by No Code, who are the folks who did Observation, which was a brilliant game that came out last year on PCs and consoles. They're these four short adventures, all of them like told from a different standpoint, but the first one is kind of set up like you're sitting in a room in a bedroom, and it's around about the 80s, and there's a TV in front of you, an old CRT TV, and there's a crappy looking like BBC keyboard. Lines start drawing across the screen, and it's like an old-fashioned text adventure is appearing, and you're playing it. And you don't know why you're playing it or what you're doing there, and you start inputting things, and it's like, you know, open car door and look in thing, and the kind of classic games that most of you haven't played, because this was the very, very beginning of the RPG, where it's literally just lines of text on a screen, and you know, a wizard walks into the room, what do you do? And then you just type in, like, look, or pick up, or something like that, and you have to guess what commands the game responds to. And do it all in your imagination. It was wild. But this does it in a sort of weird meta way. So if you say, go open front door, the little text on the screen says, you know, you open the front door. But downstairs, you hear...
Ka-chunk. Oh, I don't like that. That's creepy.
Yeah. And that's kind of, that's the gist. It's a really, really good little collection of spooky, carefully considered, bizarre little horror games. Four of them, and that's going to be hitting Nintendo Switch next week. And whatever they do, Observation was amazing. I don't know if that's going to come to Switch at some point, but like, I suggest supporting these guys because their stuff rules so far. Very clever and interesting. So Stories Untold, out next week. Out and about this week. We'll kick off this with a quick back chat because we've been talking about Pokemon. We might as well finish it because you finished the game, Sword and Shield, this week. What was your final takeaway from it?
I really enjoyed it. I went in a little disappointed. Obviously, this is the first Switch Pokemon, the first console Pokemon game mainline ever to be released. So I was sort of looking for like the Breath of the Wild of Pokemon, Legend of Zelda.
You wanted a big change, a big reinvention or something.
I did, yeah. I was looking for something like that. And this isn't it, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. They've revised a lot of mechanics that for long-term players is really appreciated. Conversations, actions that would normally take you too long to get through, tutorials and everything like that, it pretty much throws you into the game straight away. Mm-hmm. The new thing with Sword and Shield is called the Wild Area.
Okay.
This is a similar thing that was introduced in Pokemon Let's Go Eevee and Pikachu, where Pokemon are actually visible on the screen, so they're actually in the overworld.
Yeah, so before it was just walking into a bush and seeing if one, you know, the algorithm generated a Pokemon there and you didn't know, you just had to wander about. Whereas this one, you can actually look and see and head towards, oh, there is a Pokemon there, I will go and get it.
That's right, and you still have the random encounters now and then, like it will pop up a little exclamation mark if you want to go into that. It's the best of both worlds. And the Wild Area is fantastic. I've been spending so many hours in it, just getting lost in it. I've spent so many hours compared to the actual story. I mean, I didn't get to the first Pokemon gym till about 6 hours in, which is, I don't think I've ever done that in a Pokemon game before, just because, you know, it's normally the first hour or so, maybe two.
Yeah, but you had the Wanderlust.
Yeah, I was just exploring them because the variety of Pokemon available to you from the get-go is amazing. Like, normally you just get your normal grass types, a couple bird Pokemon, but no, it's like everything. It's like, here's your psychic types, here's your fire types, you know, you don't get these till later on in the game. So I was struggling to decide what my core six Pokemon would be, and I've never swapped out so many Pokemon throughout my adventure. Will Dynamaxing be around next time we go into a new generation? I doubt it. It seems to be just a gimmick thing. I appreciated how much it felt like Britain. It's called the Galar region. And it does take heavy inspiration, which is really cool. Even the train station being out of order because there was a issue with like the ticket system or something.
Oh, good. Was there a faint air of hostility towards Pokemon that weren't born there?
Yeah, I thought that was really brilliant. I probably will catch them all, but normally I don't. So that's quite refreshing, actually, because there are 700, 800 Pokemon in previous ones. This one is 400. I'm like, that's doable.
Oh, so you think it's more manageable?
I do.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I do think that's actually better, but I think they can do more, and I just don't know if we'll ever get the Breath of the Wild. I don't know if that's just a pipe dream now.
I think people might freak out if the main core game changed hugely, because I think that's a fan base which is very accustomed to a certain kind of product And when they change it dramatically like that, for the main game, I think people would get furious. That's what these little spin-offs are for experimenting and trying different weird things. And they'll never be as popular, but equally, they're not going to upset people.
Yes, very true. And it shows the amount of outrage that was going around these games. It was clearly the vocal minority, as Pokemon Sword and Shield has become one of the fastest selling Pokemon games of all time. Like, already, it's doing gangbusters.
It's done just fine.
Yes.
Good to know. I've been playing a few bits and pieces from both the beginning of this year and also the end of last year. So what have we done? I had a bit of a go at End of the Universe. This caught my eye because this is the guy who made Immortal Rogue, which we were a big proponents of last year. There's a video review up on the PG channel if you want to go and look at that, which was a really interesting swipe-based roguelike, which had a sort of medieval, slightly creepy gothic vibe to the whole thing. And it was lots of, say, swiping around the screen to move your character and enter into attacks. You can kind of play it pretty much one-thumbed, but was quite challenging, required a degree of precision, quite interesting little upgrade mechanics and whatnot, and just a generally good atmosphere around it. He's gone and tried to do the same thing in space, basically. He's gone for a asteroids, I guess, Space Invaders style vibe where you're in a very closed, locked off grid on space. So think something like Geo Wars or something like that. And you drag your thumb around the screen to move your craft and you have to blast the crap out of the oncoming aliens who swarm in or warp into existence inside the little area. This kind of carries over similar controls in so much as you move around and then you can swipe upwards to make little kind of thrust maneuvers to blast off in a different direction and get out of the way. But obviously you have to be generally facing in the direction of the craft in order to fire at an enemy, so you need to have them in your sights. You do get different upgrades because it's a roguelike style game. You can unlock more as you progress and then it goes back to nothing when you start again. So there are certain cannons that can rotate and track enemies a little bit, and you'll get heat-seeking rockets and that sort of thing. But it's a little bit fiddlier to control because there's a lot more obstacles on the screen. It doesn't make any sense because it's in space, but it looks like a kind of platform when you're avoiding platforms and bridges and things like that. But if you make contact with any of them, you lose health because, you know, you're flying a spaceship and you're effectively crashing into a space building. So the game punishes you for it, which makes it very difficult to control in the way that it's sorted. So if you try and turn around, your sprite doesn't just flip over 180. You have to kind of do a little circle. And it takes a bit of getting used to, and you have to be very, very careful when you're moving around. So it loses a lot of pace because of that. You can't just wang your way around the screen, fire, fire, you know, swipe, jerk, fire. You have to be very, very careful when you're maneuvering. Mm. And it makes it a little bit sort of slow and slightly awkward.
It does look like there's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, I like the style. It's, you know, 16-bit style graphics and all of that, same as Immortal Rogue. I think Immortal Rogue feels initially more successful at what it's doing. But I might try and play a little bit more. But it's, I think it's free. It's worth a go. You can get it on iPhone and iPad at the App Store, and it's currently available on Android as well if you want to go and have a look at it. But End of the Universe is the name of that one. And even if you look at it and go, eh, maybe not, go and have a look at his previous one. Look at Immortal Rogue, because that was a banger. Well worth a look. What's next on the list? Oh, yeah. Tap Tap Fish Abyss Rheum Pole, which is not the game I thought it was at all. So I downloaded this because Dan, editor-in-chief, has been playing it, and he played the previous game, which was Tap Tap Fish something else. It had a different suffix. Basically, it was a watery game set in the middle of the ocean, and this one is, because it's Abyss Rheum Pole, is set in the Arctic, or the North, or whatever, whichever pole exists. I had assumed, I don't know what I had assumed, platformer, auto-runner, something like that. It's not. It's a tapper by the way of a little building city generation game, I suppose. So you start off with just an iceberg floating in the middle of the water, and then you tap on the iceberg, just tap, 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 and you generate hearts, which is a currency that you then spend. And the idea is you start generating fish and wildlife and plants, and you're building your own little sort of icy paradise. You're doing your own little, what's her name from Frozen? Elsa, that's it. She makes a nice palace, doesn't she? I'm down with the kids. And you're basically generating this little sort of winter wonderland around you. And so once you've earned enough cash, you can buy a penguin, and then he skates around a little bit, and then you generate another penguin mate, and then that unlocks the ability to make new kinds of penguins, and then fish, and then whales and stuff like that.
Bunnies
and
you as also well. Build...
Yes, frozen bunnies, why not?
Yeah.
And you also do plant life as well, so you're generating seaweed and weird crawlers and space... Not space bushes. Frozen Arctic bushes. So it's a mixture of doing the tapping if you want to generate it quickly, or once you generate all the assets, they themselves generate stuff, and so you can just go away, leave the game, come back to it, and then, you know, collect and build more. Never really understood these games, to be honest. Like, Tappers never did it for me, and the little generate your own ecosystem and just let it thrive. I get the pleasure in that. I get the idle game kind of open it up, and you can see that everything's grown and that your little dudes are wandering around doing their little thing.
Yeah, I think that's helped bring the Sims franchise to such a big mainstream level.
But I think there's more agency in something like The Sims. Like, you're telling your little dudes to do things, and you're recreating. It was supposed to be, as all these things are, like a parody of consumerism and capitalism, and then turned into, hey, you can buy sponsored clothing for real money. So it ate its own tail a little bit. But this, it's just like, I'd compare it to having those little, like a diorama, or you know how people make little moss plant things. So they take an empty jam jar and they put moss in it and then they grow. It's like having a little ecosystem that you come and check in on. So there's an aesthetic quality to it where it just looks nice. And certainly with all the frostiness, all the, you know, frozen Arctic visuals, it's pretty and it's blue and, you know, the penguins are cute. They wander around
they are cute,
doing penguin things. Yeah, it's nice. So, you know, it's not really for me, but I understand the previous game did well enough to justify these sequels. So Tap Tap Fish Abyssian Pole is the name of that one. You can go and check that out. What other things? Oh, we got a new game from the Rusty Lake lot, who are exclusively known for doing these narrative puzzle games. And they've been doing them for absolutely ages. And they're usually these point-and-click adventures with slightly weird vibes to them. Have you ever seen any of them before?
I haven't, no.
No, it's slightly odd ones. So you had, there was a hotel series called Rusty Lake Hotel. And it's literally you exploring this, you know, hotel area. But it's very, almost... Twin Peaksy comparisons are overused, but it genuinely is clearly cribbing on Twin Peaks and that kind of thing. And this new one is called The White Door. Point-and-click mystery, apparently dabbling with themes of amnesia and minimalism. And this guy you take control of, Robert Hill, is inside a mental health facility. And so you're dealing with that as well as trying to cope with a bunch of lost memories. Haven't played it, but if... it's anything like their previous games, and I'm sure it will be. Expect weird point-and-click, old-fashioned adventure game stuff mixed with surrealism and almost a little smidgen of horror thrown in for good measure. So that's out on both iPhone, iPad, and Android. The White Door is the name of that one. Probably the most fun I had with any of the games was from last year's list. So the last one we put up before Christmas featured a game called Odd Man. And I don't know if you've seen this, Matthew, or whether you've seen any of Colin Lane's games. Colin Lane does a lot of those, like Golf Zero, and basically he's mad for golf, but also he does those kind of physics combat games. The first one was called Wrestling.
Okay.
And it was incredibly lo-fi, and the idea is that it's very, very loose, elastic physics, and you can't really attack in a conventional sense. You kind of swipe on the screen, and your character kind of lurches forward in a really clumsy way, and you're basically mashing your character against other characters to try and get him out of the ring. And it was a really fun, surprise little hit, because it's just got a lot of chaos around it. Odd Man feels like a kind of refined... version of that. And by refined, I mean Wrestling was very lo-fi, like super lo-fi, like 8-bit looking. Whereas this looks much more like a indie in that like pastel colours kind of way.
Okay, yeah, I see that, yeah.
And it is really good fun. So you take control of your main character, you start out on an island, and then there's another character blips into existence, and you swipe on the screen, and your character lurches in that direction, you knock him off. And the goal is to knock all the enemies off into the water, and then you move on to the next stage. Dead simple. As the levels progress, you get more enemies appearing, different types of enemies. And I say enemies, they're not like, they haven't got guns or anything for the most part. What they are is just different shape creatures, and some of them will jump around of their own accord. Some of them will actually repel you when you try and smash into them. your character can kind of fly because all you do is swipe in a direction and he leaps that way. But also if he's in the air, you can swipe again and he'll again leap out in whichever direction you swipe. So you can kind of double jump basically forever. And it's got that chaos I was talking about before, where it's like the previous game from the Immortal Rogue guy, it lost some of the chaos and the vibrancy and the split second, like this has that in spades. So you're jumping around and knocking people off and it's always, always satisfying. Then bosses appear and they do, like one of them has a cannon strapped to him, so you have to avoid them. And the cannonballs don't really hurt, but they will knock you closer and closer to like the water or the wall, because the levels have this kind of external wall, like it's been carved out the inside of a cave or a mountain or something. So if you smash into the wall, you'll die. And if you go into the water, you'll die. So you're constantly trying to stay airborne and repel these dudes off of their various platforms and stuff. There is a progression system. You can level up your power and your health. You get special attacks. You get skins and that kind of thing. But it's just really fun. Really immediate, engaging, silly, daft, light, puts a smile on your face kind of fun.
Nice.
This is another one, iOS and Android. Oddman is the name of it. I would genuinely, like, that's kind of the recommendation for the week, if you like. There are a few other things that appeared. So at the end of last year, we had AI Dungeon, which is literally what I was talking about when we were discussing Stories Untold and mentioned text adventures from the past. It's literally that. So you're just getting a screen with a bunch of text on it saying, you are Wizardo, a wizard living in the kingdom of Larian. You have a staff and a spellbook. You finish your long journey, finally arrive at the ruin you've been looking for. You look around and see that it's a ruined temple with several rooms inside. And then there's just a bit at the bottom of the screen saying, what will you do? And then you just type stuff, and it's up to you to try and work out what the game wants from you based on what it's told. And this is what original RPGs used to be, and there's been a few little rebirths of this. And this is one of those. So AI Dungeon is the name of that. That's iPhone and iPad and Android as well. Haven't played it. Apparently it's got extremely advanced artificial intelligence, which uses a deep neural network. I'm curious to have a go on that and see if it genuinely comes up with good stuff or if it's just utter nonsense.
It sounds fancy.
Well, there's a version of this I've been told, because I don't have an Alexa or anything like that in my house, because I refuse to have microphones sitting around the place that listen in on me all the time. But apparently there's a really good text adventure style game on that, where the device, you know, reads out all this stuff and then you will give the command, you open door or pick up book or something like that, and it responds. And everyone that I've heard who's had a go at it says it's actually really impressive. So you can just kind of sit on your couch or whatever and play a game conversationally with a little speaker. Huh. And apparently it's not garbage.
What a time to be alive.
So you can go and have a look at that one. AI Dungeon is the name. And the other one that appeared this week was a game called Realm Hacker, which on first blush, it looks like something like a Lumines or a block bashing game or something like that. But it's not. It's a platformer with a cyberpunk hacking theme. And the idea is levels are filled with colorful blocks and you reformat and interact with the blocks to clear the way. So you need to like generate platforms by making the blocks appear a certain color. You can get rid of the blocks so you can access different areas, grab keys, get out of the area. You can see a trailer for it up. It's all very lo-fi and cute looking. But Realm Hacker is the name of that, and that's out on just iOS at the moment right now. Okay, that'll do. First podcast of the year done. We promised there'll be many more this year, and now we've got our staff in. So we had Matthew this week. We're probably going to have maybe Rick subbing in next week, now that he's back, and Dan appearing as well. So there'll be a rotation.
51 weeks to go.
I know, right? Just 51 weeks. But yeah, we will be back next week, as promised, with more game info. So do come and join us then. Thanks for joining me, Matthew.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.